This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Good morning, everyone. This morning we're doing Jukai, which means to receive the precepts. And in since the time of the Buddha, this has been a path, a path of vow, a path of taking vows at the right time. Vows are a very powerful force, perhaps the most powerful force in the human realm. And in taking vows, we bring into alignment our bodies, speech, and thoughts, and our intentions, and bring those into alignment with, in this case, the Buddha Dharma, the Buddha teachings. And very importantly, our own thoughtful, careful reflection that needs to take place over time and needs to take place within training, within practice, so that it's not a thought process in abstraction or a thought process about something that is distant, but it's very real, it's alive, it's being lived. So that those vows can be taken with eyes open and with a reasonable sense of the implications of the vows. And I say reasonable because the nature of the vow is there's so much we don't know yet. And this is always true within the nature of vow. That if we wait too long so that we can know more, then we waste a lot of time and effort. But if we go too soon, and our eyes aren't sufficiently open, and we don't have a reasonable understanding of the implications of our vows, then we can also waste a lot of time. And so we try in our training to find that right time, which is both is initiated by the student. So the student asks to receive Jukai. This is not an automatic thing. In a sense, the only automatic thing is delusion. But in terms of training, everyone has brought ourselves here. Every student has asked to enter into formal training. Every person who's received vows has asked to do so. And that's a very important part of this. And so today, three students have done that, are doing that, and so we're going to all be a part of that. And these teachings are as old as Buddhism itself and are essential to the path itself, along with samadhi and insight, calming the mind and gaining understanding. First, the students will do three vows to the Buddha. And so in this, they acknowledge their relationship with and their debt, you might say, to the Buddha for his teachings, for his life, and what he offered to all of us by his teachings. And so it's a recognition of our original teacher and the living link in that. And then now they will do vows to their parents. And so their parents are not here, or if they're deceased, they'll bow in the direction of where their parents live or are buried. And that's a recognition of our blood family lineage. And so these three sets of vows are recognition of the interdependent links that we have with people, living and deceased, who have been instrumental in allowing us and enabling us, supporting us in being where we are today, specifically for these three students. And then the last set of vows, they'll come in and do the bows to their teacher, their preceptor, who today is myself. And each of these students has been in training for a number of years, some for quite a number of years, and that's important, as I said earlier, and also because it's not automatic. It's really, you know, entering into a commitment, and so that has to be based in the student's own desire and their faith and their sense of imperative of why that is so important to them to do that. And so each student comes to that in their own time, if at all. Now, many people today think of and of Buddhism as a religion, and that's fine. In essence, it's a path. It's always been a path. That is its essence. And receiving Chökyi, the precepts, the taking the bodhisattva vows as your own vows, become then an integral part of the path. They've always been this path. They can't be divided. But by taking vows, we commit ourselves to making them within our consciousness, within our lives, within our actions, our decisions, our interactions, within the whole of our lives, a very dynamic, very conscious part of our own awakening, and very essentially based in wisdom and selfless compassion, which is wisdom and compassion. They are the vows to that recognize that our lives are indivisible from the lives of others. And these are not just the people that are directly in our lives, but all people, all beings, all creatures, all things, this earth. That's what is realized. That is our one essence, our one nature. When we don't live in accord with that, there will be suffering. There is suffering. That's just a natural law. And so to raise bodhicitta, to awaken to that understanding, and then to bring ourselves more and more alignment to it is really bring ourselves more and more alignment to ourselves, to our deepest yearnings, and to the life that we live in, live within. So first we will, as we begin, we'll do an invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And as we spoke about earlier in the week, without the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, there is no path. There is no Buddhism. There is no bodhisattva vow. There are many kinds of lives. There are many good lives, many sincere lives in vow. But here today, in this place, to invoke, to take refuge, to practice within the three treasures is this path. And so first we invoke, we call forth, draw upon the wisdom and virtues of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha into this place and time. The Buddha, our original teacher, and his enlightenment of realization of Buddha nature, which is our nature. The Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, of all enlightened beings, and that self nature in all things, all dharmas, this precious world that we live in. And the Sangha, all those dedicated to the Buddhist path, our own community, all those who are dedicated to a path of awakening, and all beings, because all beings ultimately seek that, all beings ultimately have that self-nature. And I'll do this once in English and twice in Japanese. Everybody please, Kasho. Mm. namu jipo butsu namu jipo ho namu jipo so namu hanshi shakyamuni butsu namu daisy dai hi kuku kanze on bosa namu dajin fugen bosa namu dajin manju shri bosa namu koso joyo daishi namu taiso josa daishi namu riki daiso shi bosatsu. Be one with the Buddha in the Ten Directions. Be one with the Dharma in the Ten Directions. Be one with the Sangha in the Ten Directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi, be one with Taiso Josai Daishi, be one with the successive great ancestors. Namu Jipo Butsu Namu Jipo Ho Namu Jipo So Namu Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namu Daisy Dai Hi Kyuku Kanzeon Bosa Namu Daijin Fugen Bosa Namu Daishin Manjushri Bosa, Namu Koso Joyo Daishi, Namu Taiso Josai Daishi, Namu Riki Daiso Shibosatsu. Now, of course, the three treasures are always present. The invocation is so that they're present in our minds. And next we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. And this is such an important part of a spiritual life, that as soon as we begin looking at our lives seriously, examining with the intention, with the commitment to awaken, we have to take account of all that's come before. And we don't do that in a self-conscious way, but just by being present and awake, it comes to us because it resides within us. Memories, the seeds of past actions that bear fruit in the form of regret and remorse, the things that burden us, that cloud our minds and make it easier to continue to perpetuate unskillful cycles within ourselves. And so how do we honestly and in a genuine way address those karmic burdens such that we can attend to what needs to be attended to, if and when that's appropriate, and we can also come to liberate ourselves from carrying things that are no longer serving us. And so the Gatha of Atonement brings our attention to all the karma that we've ever created, all actions based in intention, and specifically those that have been based in our aversion, all forms of anger in that arise out of our greediness, all forms of grasping, and that arise out of our delusion, all forms of confusion, apathy, indifference, born of body, mouth, and thought, because those are the instruments by which we create the world. And then atonement. I atone for it all. I take responsibility, right, for this body and mind, this person. I recognize the conditions in which actions take place, but I take the responsibility for those actions. And then I move forward to address those actions in whatever way is needed. I let go of what I'm holding on to, and I move forward with a renewed vow, a renewed clarity. So we'll all do this together, invite everyone to do this. So we'll do it three times and call an echo. So everyone please gassho. Nyirin Shoki. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. One of the nice things about doing these liturgies together while you're receiving the vows, that we're all involved in this. And so in this Sagatha of Atonement, everyone, anyone who turns inward, anyone who pays attention, even just a little bit, can understand this and can be moved and relate to this. We all, in a sense, meet here. Now, having invoked the three treasures, having acknowledged, and this is Spurgeon, the Buddha mind that is present within each of you, we'll begin the receiving of the precepts themselves. We begin with the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, because there is no practice, there's no path without the three treasures, and because it's not just enough that they be present, that they exist, but taking refuge is creating that undividable, indivisible, intimate bond. It's realizing the three treasures as your own body and mind. So again, we'll do this all together, twice in Japanese, once in English. We do it in English, we'll do it in call and echo so that everyone can take refuge. Joking. Everyone, please, Gosho. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye so wago san kiye ho wat riji san kiye bukyo kiye ho kyo kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye ho kyo kiye so kyo.
Will you maintain this?
Now the three pure precepts. And the pure precepts, Stelroshi used to always say, is a way of describing how an enlightened being lives their life. And I spoke about it at the beginning of the week also as a way of looking at these is a basic mind state. You might think of it as basic attitude, a basic posture of being in the world, to be in the world in such a way that we're committed to not creating harm, to be in the world in such a way that in all ways, at all times, we're committed to trying to practice good, to bring good into the world, and in all ways to be actualizing good for others. So the first of the pure precepts is to not, create evil. This is telling us that evil, all that is harmful, all that is hurtful, all that is not affirming of life is only caused through our actions of body, speech, and thought arising from the afflictions of mind. And so to not create evil is to bring that to a place of clarity, a place of purity in which no evil arises. No harmful actions usher forth. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas, to not create evil. Will you maintain this?
I vow not to create evil.
The second of the pure precepts is to practice good. Just as all harmful actions arise from human consciousness, all good that is brought into the world is brought through human consciousness and action based in intention. And so it's not enough just not to create harm, just to try and not add to the confusion or chaos of the world, but rather to go further than that. That is the heart of the Bodhisattva vow, to be of benefit in the world, to bring benefit to all beings, the great vow. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
Practicing good is so profound because it means just be of a mind that is practicing good, whether someone is present or not, whether someone notices or not, whether the effect of that action is discernible or not. But actualized good for others says that we still need to go further and ensure that that our actions are being affecting towards others, that it is actually bringing benefit into the world, that it is changing things. And so to actualize good for others is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy, this to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
Okay. Now bow. Now these pure precepts are remarkable in their simplicity. Their depth and their profound nature is in their simplicity of expression. Right? What they require of us takes a lifetime or two to really plumb the depths of these very, very simple words, right? Which are not just words, but they're ways of being. The grave precepts bring, and their simplicity is, part of their simplicity is that they're so vast, right? They direct our minds to just these basic states of being, not to a time or a place or a particular action or a state of mind. That's all within our hands. The grave precepts step into that very place, a time and place, a state of mind, an action, and its consequence. And so the 10 grave precepts point to those ways of being, those ways of acting that cause the most harm, the most burdensome karma. And also, when the mind becomes clear, when the heart becomes compassionate, where that very same impulse is transformed to do the most amount of good possible. And so they, one, tell us how to begin to interrupt, break those patterns of karmic burden, and then to bring a tremendous radiance and buoyancy into the life, in ordinary life. And so the first of the great precepts is to affirm life, to not kill. So this is based in the understanding that all things as Master Dogen said in the fast school we're studying, have a dignified bearing. All things have life, animate and inanimate, in their very being. And to take that life away is to take away its opportunity to be in this world, in its natural place, and in its intimate relationship with all things, even more so for what we consider living things and human beings, even more so, because we have the ability through our consciousness to do so much positive in our life. So no creature falls short of its own completeness. So this is about not harboring a mind of destruction, but rather cultivating a mind of affirmation, bringing forth life. Dogen said, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. To maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and to not kill life. Affirm life. Do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
And Buddhism, of course, recognizes that in order to live, we must take life. And so much of their teachings and practices that help us to look that squarely in the eye and ask that question, how do we do that then and maintain this precept? The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. So this is really about the mind of clinging, of attachment, of grasping, of trying to acquire. Sensing that in some way our lives are insufficient, we go to look and find something to acquire, to obtain from the outside, to fill that void. But of course, that has never actually happened in the history of the world. And so to not steal is to, in time and space, to not take things that don't belong to us, because that causes suffering, and also because it strengthens and cultivates that mind that believes that there is something outside that is needed. And so to develop a non-grasping mind, to not seek contentment in things and power and titles and positions, really it's about cultivating a mind of generosity. So the first great precept is about cultivating a mind of life itself, of living, and here to be generous, one of the great virtues of the Bodhisattva, and to not believe in that illusion of insufficiency. The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
The Buddha spoke a lot about these teachings, not just in terms of the action and when something occurs, because that just happens in a moment, but all of the time and energy, the mind, the consciousness that goes into, and in a sense is wasted, in bringing forth that very action, and then all of the subsequent moments, that can be years, in fact, that go into the consequence of that action. And the nature of desire is that it encourages us not to look before and not to look after, but just to try and find that, fulfill that desire. And so practice is about understanding the nature of causation so that we look much more broadly. The third great precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality. So this is recognizing that all living things have a sexual force, a sexual energy in the world that is obviously used to procreate, but in the human world is also is about so many other things. It's about intimacy, it's about love and affection. It has the power to bring us forward, to heal wounds. But when misused, it has the power to create tremendous suffering, distrust, anger, hatred, and pain. And so to honor the body is to be of a mind that recognizes that dignified bearing of all beings, to respect and love and appreciate all that people are, all that a person is, and to not divide, to not reduce a person to any part, And so to not misuse sexuality in a selfish way, but to use it in a way that brings together, that brings joy, that brings intimacy. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and ignorance, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. We maintain this.
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
The fourth precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. So this precept is about, it's so important in practice, because it's the whole of practice is about awakening to the real nature of things, the true nature, to dissolve all of the many veils and cloaks that obscure our ability to see things as they actually are. And so then what does our practice become if at the very same time we're cultivating non-truths in our mind, that we're manifesting and bringing forth non-truths through our thoughts, words, and actions? Clearly, this is not going to serve us or anyone. And so this precept is really saying to not be afraid of truth, of truthfulness. And there are sutras that speak about the need that we will have to be courageous in facing what is true. And every practitioner should know this, how real and true that is. So to not turn away from what's real, but rather to seek it, and not to wait to be brought into what is true, but to try and initiate that. To live without deception is to live without regret, which is a wonderful thing, a wonderful way to live lightly and with a straightforward mind and heart. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess nor completeness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
The fifth precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind. And this deals with our ability to intoxicate the mind with drink or drugs. And there are many other ways to do it. Traditionally, this is what this refers to. But there any way that we cloud the natural clarity of mind, that we obscure that purity of mind, that we seek an escape through that cloudiness from ourself, and that we become less responsible through that. And so this is not only to not cloud the mind, but to have more and more respect and reverence for the natural purity of mind that begins to become available to us through practice. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. We maintain this.
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
The next precept is to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults. And so within these 10 great precepts, three of the precepts speak specifically to how we use speech, recognizing how powerful language is. And here we can think of speaking of others' errors and faults as a kind of harshness of speech, in which we bring the attention away from ourselves and bring it to someone else's person. It can also be a way of reducing a person to an action, to an error and a fault. And yet we need to be able, in different ways and in different roles that we play, to be able to speak critically of people. And so what this precept is saying is, when necessary, do that, but do it with a loving heart. Do it out of the desire to help and serve rather than to belittle or diminish or to destroy. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
The next precept stays with speech and says, realize self and others in one as one, and do not elevate the self and blame others. So in one, speaking of others' errors and faults, we can think of that as speaking harshly, using words like a weapon. To elevate the self and blame others, we can think of this as speaking divisively. Of elevating self and blaming others. This is what happens within individuals. Between individuals, it happens between groups. When there's no self-clinging, then praise and blame are like breezes passing by. We understand that they are created, that they are constructions. What is their purpose? Is it to help or is it to hurt? When we understand the self-nature that is true and that is present in all beings. And there's no more seeking to bring others down in order to raise ourselves. We no longer find pleasure in that. Dogen says, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither outside nor inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not even a square inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and others as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and others as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
The next precept is to give generously, to not be withholding. So again, another precept bringing our attention to the development of generosity. Not stealing was to not take what doesn't belong to us. This precept is about offering what we have that would be of value to another person, whether it's an object, whether it's time, whether it's attention, whether it's courtesy. The smallest gift, if it could help someone, is to be offered, to not be stingy or withholding. In every moment, in every encounter, we always have something to offer. We should just reflect on that. To hold on, thinking that if we give, then we lose something, is to have already lost. That when we let go, suddenly the world becomes vast and abundant. Dogen said, one phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The ninth precept is to actualize harmony, to not be angry. So when there is a conflict in the mind, this precept is to practice that conflict, to recognize it, to take responsibility for it, and to not be afraid to make the first move towards peace, towards understanding. That acceptance of a situation is not inaction. To not be angry doesn't mean to deny or suppress anger. It also recognizes that sometimes anger expressed in the desire to help, to serve, to get attention, to get someone's attention, to move things forward, can sometimes be a compassionate form of anger. But we have to be very attentive that that's where it's coming from. When angry, this precept becomes most important. How within a moment of anger do you practice that anger in such a way that you bring compassion into that action, into that anger, and move towards its resolution of the conflict without suppressing the emotion, but also without inflicting the emotion on others? Dogen says it's not regressing, it's not advancing, it's not real, it's not unreal. There's an illuminated cloud ocean and there's an ornamented cloud ocean. Very powerful words Dogen speaks about anger here, the nature of anger. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
And then the last of the great precepts is to experience the intimacy of things, to not defile the three treasures. So you first received the three treasures by taking refuge, and now the precepts bring you back around to what is the right relationship that you cultivate, that you establish, that you commit to with regard to the three treasures, recognizing them as both your body and mind, this living spiritual community, and the whole world. This precept is saying, don't turn against your own home. Don't step outside of the only thing you have. To take refuge and practice the three treasures as your own body and mind, when your practice wavers, enter here. When you have doubts, enter here through the three treasures. Master Dogen said, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them, just practice them, realize and actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
And it's important to say that that doesn't mean that we can't be critical, that we can't speak about, in a critical way, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But it's what we're committing to doing is to doing that from within a place of contact, of connection, in essence, from a place of love. These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts have been handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha to my teacher, Dada Roshi, to me, and now to you. I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Okay. Three paths. And now I'd like to just offer a few words of Dada Roshi's to bring him into this moment. When the true eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye opens, one is realized as everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the pure Dharmakaya, the absolute unity of the universe. When the Dharma eye functions, it creates a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in this universe is hidden. Everything is already revealed. Everything is exactly and completely as it is. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, which is like the diamond sword of Manjushri. It cuts through all of our delusive thoughts and perceptions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion. It's like an unbounded love, the mercy of Samantabhadra, the great compassion of Avalokiteshvara. Everyone has these two eyes, as does the Buddha. When we open both eyes, then we realize Buddha mind. When we realize Buddha mind, we see for ourselves that self-nature and Buddha nature are not two, but one. And this is the treasury of the true Dharma eye, Shobogenzo. robe of the Buddha. The list of the ancestors, the lineage of the ancestors. The Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Denise Malkui, having fulfilled the precepts, training, requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery and the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 13th day of May, 2018, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Eko. The lineage of the ancestors. The lineage that Kichimagu is given during Jikai, because in Buddhism, this is the point at which a student enters formally into the Sangha as a Buddhist. This is to certify that Carolyn Mattoon, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery, the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 13th day of May, 2018, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Chosen. This is to certify that Carolyn Leaf, having fulfilled the training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 13th day of May, 2018, received the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Karen. Shoki, everyone please gassho. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. Now the Jisha will lead these recipients of the Bodhisattva precepts around the Zendo, allowing everyone to do a standing bow as they pass you as a way of acknowledging and congratulating them for having taken vows. So let me just say a little bit about your names. So we are continuing the tradition of using Chinese characters with a Japanese pronunciation in English. So these names are, the teacher chooses these names for each student at the time of Jikai, during the week of training. And they reflect, you know, they're drawn out of the teacher's reflection of the student, their practice, where they've come from to be here, where they're going. And they're offered as teachings, as encouragement and pointers. And the nature of the characters and the names are that they in a sense, begin anew right now, today. And then they continue to practice with you, to be infused by your practice and to help guide your practice over the years that come. So, Denise, your name is Eko. So, A is the character for long, but it has the sense of being eternal, something that is unending, that is ceaseless. All things, anything that we can name, is impermanent by its very nature. Everything that arises must pass. And then when the Buddha was seeking enlightenment, he was seeking that liberation which was not based on something that came and went. And so A is to be free of all names and characteristics. We call it eternal because we don't know how else to express it. How do we speak of that which has no beginning and end? How do we know such a thing? Right? We can't know it with words. We can't know it with our thinking mind. It was here before you arrived. It will be here present after you depart. A is eternal. And Ko is peace, ease. This is the liberation from suffering. This is no hindrance in the mind. This is the path of courage and kindness and trust. This peace, too, was here before you arrived, and it will be here after you depart. Practice is the great returning to this basic space, this eternal peace, which is within each of us. You can never be apart from Eko. But with practice, steady, diligent, trusting practice, this Eko will become more and more your own intimate body and mind. Eko, eternal peace. Lynn, your name, Chosen. So my Dharma aunt, Chosen. It's a different characters. Chosen. Cho means serene. Serenity. It's the path, step by step, to be cultivating within ourselves, to be transforming mind and body from disturbed to calm, from agitated to tranquil, from confused to serene. It's reclaiming a natural order of mind. That mind is this mind. It's Buddha mind. It's everyday mind. It's the mind of all beings. There is only one mind. And its nature is Cho, serene. And this serenity is not dependent upon sound or silence, action or inaction. It is our basic nature, and it needs to be practiced and cultivated. But what is it that's being calmed? What is it that's being clarified? Sen means water. It's the stuff of life. It's the stuff that everything arises from, this sen, this spring, this eternal spring, bubbling up out of the ground, out of the depth of the earth, from deep within, the inner chamber, as Dogen speaks of it. And as it arises, it's cool and clear and pure, and it quenches the thirst of desire, of samsara, and of suffering. Chosen is this very water itself, this serene water. Practice is to discover this as our own nature. So Chosen is day by day this serene water becoming more and more clear, more and more tranquil. And Chosen is here now. Chosen is your very nature. And Carolyn Karen, I had to keep thinking that this sounds like Karen with a southern accent. But now erase all of that from your memories. K here is jewel, is the mani gem, the unbreakable diamond, It's the pearl that the whole dime that the dragon holds in her claw. It's enlightenment, it's self-nature. It's your mind. It's unbreakable because it can't, it's never created or destroyed. Who could break it? It's a jewel because its radiance is luminous. It illuminates the darkness, reveals what has been hidden, it makes all things clear. K is the wish-fulfilling jewel. The wish is bodhicitta. The wish is to fulfill your bodhisattva vows. Rin is to face, to turn towards, to be present to, and also it contains the sense of being faced by. So Karin is to face that jewel, to study the way is to study the self. To realize the mountain is to face the mountain. But it's also being in the presence of that very thing. Dogen says, mountains, rivers, the earth, sun, moon, and stars are mind, are this very jewel. Now at this moment, what is it that appears before you? What is it that you are facing, and what is it that is facing you? And so in sitting, you turn the light around. In standing and walking, you step into what is before you, facing reality as it is, facing demons as they are, being present without judgment, without denial, without clinging. Karin is to face the 10,000 things. Everywhere you look, you see the self-nature at your own face. It is truly you, and you are not it. Karin, facing the jewel. These great bodhisattva precepts have been handed down to us all of these many hundreds of years, hundreds and hundreds of years, practice by people just like us, having been received on days just like this in so many parts of the world. It's a living link, right? It's a living link with humanity. Rising out of a basic desire, recognition of the basic goodness of ourselves and of this world, and a desire to live in that goodness. And to realize that it's not just enough that we have that within our own lives, but that it be not only shared with others, but be others, that it be the whole world. And so in entering into these vows, as I said at the beginning, you enter in with your eyes open, having trained for quite a number of years, and at the same time, necessarily, you enter into an unknown, a great, vast spaciousness in which these vows are practiced and lived. And so I really encourage you, implore you, to really trust these teachings. They are so much more than they appear. They have so much more to offer than any of us could imagine, because our imaginations are so limited. And so we have to go beyond that and discover them directly. So in this way, these vows have changed your life, your lives, in ways that you know and in ways that you will come to know. And that is a most delicious future. So, congratulations. And may your lives go well.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.